Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
News now about women and prisons in Massachusetts. Overall, Massachusetts ranks fairly high in the number and quality of services offered to women while they are incarcerated. But a new study finds the same is not true after their release. In fact, former female inmates die at a much higher rate than men who have been in prison.
To understand the cost and consequences of this finding, we spoke earlier with Susan Surrett. She's professor of sociology at Suffolk University and co-author of the study, Women and the Criminal Justice Landscape in Massachusetts. Where are they now?
So your study draws some pretty remarkable conclusions about the lives of women after they are released from prisons in Massachusetts. The thing that really caught my attention was that you found that the vast majority of them suffer from some form of mental illness or substance abuse. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
That is exactly the case, and let me just clarify that this is true all over the country. And in fact, the situation in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is better than almost anywhere else in the country. But here, as in the rest of the country, the reality is that the vast majority of women who are incarcerated in whether it's local jails or state prisons suffer from mental illness and or substance abuse. And of course, according both to the American Psychiatric Association and the American Psychological Association, substance abuse is a mental illness as well.
And we're talking 85% here.
Those are the numbers that are true pretty much throughout the country and true in Massachusetts as well. In Massachusetts, what we do know is that about half of the women in our state prison, in MCI Framingham, are actually clients of state mental health agencies. There's probably close to another 35% who are not clients of an official state agency, but take psychiatric medication, have been diagnosed as bipolar or schizophrenic, certainly struggle day to day with mental health issues.
Mm. And Professor Surrett, your study is entitled Women and the Criminal Justice System, Where Are They Now? What is the answer to that question? What happens to these women upon their release?
Here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, we are very slow to incarcerate women. If we look around the rest of the country, the average age in which women are incarcerated is often in their early 20s or mid-20s. Here in Massachusetts, women are really getting help from the state in many ways, and they're not being incarcerated until their 30s.
So I suppose that's a good thing.
I think it's an excellent thing, and I think a huge amount of credit goes to the Department of Corrections in Massachusetts that absolutely understands what the situation is.
And yet, Professor Surrett, if I may, your studies found that while, you know, as you said, the situation in Massachusetts is likely much better than in the rest of the country, nevertheless, of those women that you followed upon their release from incarceration, 1 in 10 of them, or a little more than 1 in 10 of them, were dead within 15 years.
Correct. We looked at the numbers of all of the women released from MCI Framingham in 1995, and out of those 839 women, 97, we have death certificates for them. So the death rate's probably even a little bit higher, and average age at death for those women is in their mid-40s. So, yeah, this is real. This is very distressing.
So does this suggest to you that there's a gap or some sort of lack in post-incarceration services, whatever they might be in Massachusetts, for women in particular?
I think I'd frame it a little bit differently. I think that the lack is in pre-incarceration services as well as post-incarceration services. The majority of women in the prison system in Massachusetts, as in the rest of the country, have been abused, often sexually abused as children, have learning disabilities, struggled in school, perhaps didn't even graduate from high school, have been on and off or chronically homeless throughout their teenage years and their adult lives. We want to be very careful and say that this is not the fault of the Department of Corrections. They're not messing up these women who entered prison perfectly okay. It's quite the opposite. I mean, women get fairly decent mental health services in prison. But once they're released, they're out in the world, and there's no continuity of care. There's no real coordination of care. Some of the women that we've been following for more than 3 years have been in 15 different detoxification programs over those 3 years.
15?
Eight different therapists over those 3 years. So there's a real fragmentation of services, and it frustrates me as a researcher and as a taxpayer. It frustrates the women. But I want to emphasize that it also frustrates the people who work in the system.
Professor Sered, if I may ask, how does the situation for women differ from that of men? Is it remarkably different?
It's extremely different. You're really talking about two completely different populations. First of all, there are far more men incarcerated than women. Second of all, the rate of mental illness among incarcerated women is much higher than among incarcerated men. And finally, there have been two very suggestive studies that have been done in other states that show that this high rate of mortality post-incarceration is more severe for women than for men. Hmm. And you have to realize that the male prison population includes far more violent criminals, people who are involved in gangs. The female incarcerated population is generally not violent criminals, so the fact that they're dying in these high rates post-incarceration is really frightening. They're dying of disease. They're dying of illness.
Well, on that note, Professor Sered, what suggestions did you come up with to, you know, do something about this high rate of, I guess, post-incarceration mortality amongst women?
Really what it boils down to is coordinating services. There's no magic pill that's going to solve the problems of women who have been sexually abused, physically abused, living on the streets, pretty much unemployable at this point in their lives, may have lost custody of their children, they're homeless. There's no magic pill. But I think that we could institute a system of personal caseworkers in which this population that I'm describing, that we don't really have a good name for them, sort of the unfortunates, would have a caseworker who would coordinate her services in prison, out of prison, in a homeless shelter, whether she's in an apartment, whether she's on the streets, whether she's staying with a friend. What we find that's so tragic here in Massachusetts is that these women are getting services, but the services are not working. Mm. You know, they're going to the doctors are doing tests, and then the tests aren't being followed up upon. The doctors are writing prescriptions, the prescriptions aren't being filled, or they run out. And it's easy to blame the women and say, you should just follow up better. But the reality is that to a large extent, we're talking about a population that is incapable of doing that. I don't think it serves them well to be getting help from 15 different agencies and programs. Mm-hmm. I couldn't keep track of all of that.
Well, Professor Susan Sered is co-author, along with Maureen Norton Hawk, of a new study entitled Women and the Criminal Justice System in Massachusetts, Where Are They Now? Professor Sered, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
And coming up on the program, more and more women in Massachusetts are choosing to give birth at home, but no one regulates the midwives who help them deliver their babies. On Beacon Hill Now, lawmakers want to change that. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.